What's up, Panther Nation? What's up, Panther Nation? It's your boy, the Professor, from CarolinaCatChronicles.com, bringing you the C3 podcast every Tuesday night. You can download it later on iTunes, catch it on Stitcher, and make sure to check us out for all the hottest Panther talk. I'm happy to be here with my boy, that freaking Puerto Rican.
What's up, Panther Nation? It is me, the freaking Puerto Rican, a.k.a. Joey Riolano. I'm glad to be here on tonight's show. We have got lots going on. We're coming off a big win, dominating performance on Sunday against the, what many people thought were the mighty Detroit Lions. They turned out to be kitty cats, at least at Panther Stadium they were. And we've got a preview of the Steelers coming up Sunday night. We've got a special guest, a Steelers draft tech analyst. He'll be on to talk Pittsburgh Panthers. We've got some Ice Up Suns going on toward the end of the show. Should be a lot of fun.
Joe, we were at this game. And first of all, did you have a good time? I had a blast.
I did have a blast. I really did. I think the people we were there with did too. Actually, Shane sent me a direct message. He said, thanks for coming out. I had a real good time. So that said something to me, because they go every week, you know what I mean? They're there every Sunday that there's a home game. Right. So for him to say I had a real good time, I think he really did. Hopefully we'll be able to go back, maybe in the playoffs.
Oh, man, I'd love to get there. My goal would be to go once a month, you know, get the one game in September, one game in October, one game in November, one game in December. That would be my ultimate dream. It's kind of, I know most people must be a little surprised at times when the voice of Panther Nation comes from outside of Charlotte, you know. So we had to make a big trip. For me, it's a four-hour drive. Got to work on Monday, come back that night. I'd like to say this, anybody coming from G Vegas to Charlotte and back, if you want the secret tip on how to get and avoid game traffic, you go this crazy route. Just Google this weird little town called Carthage, North Carolina. It's the most bizarre thing ever, Joe. It's one of the oldest. When I first drove through it, it was by accident. And it was coming back from the, Tampa game last year.
Okay.
And somehow we just got on the south side of Charlotte and we went through Carthage. I mean, and it just Google took us this way. And I was like, man, this ain't the right way. It's weird. You go through this town, dude, it's just a roundabout. The whole town is just this huge roundabout with this big, like, courthouse with these huge-ass pillars, like Greek style, like Carthage, Athens, that stuff. And I Googled it, and it's one of the oldest towns in North Carolina, one of the oldest cities. It was founded in the 1790s officially, but it was older than that. And just some weird facts, if you're going through Carthage, North Carolina, is that they are famous for some sort of horse and like a buggy factory from back in the day in the 1800s, that like carriages that horses pulled. And supposedly Henry Ford went and checked that site out for potential Ford Motors and converting that buggy factory into a car factory originally, but then decided to move it to Detroit. Also, they considered putting there was rumors that they were considering putting UNC Chapel Hill there. Crazy. That's weird. Crazy. It's the most bizarre route. It's like a back road route, but dude, I make it 4 hours and maybe it took me 4 hours and 20 minutes to get back from Charlotte, which is maybe 20 minutes more than if you are just pounding 85 or what is it? 485?
Yeah, 85 to 40, right?
Yeah, and like that route is faster, but not with game traffic, and you don't hit any game traffic, so dudes, check that out if you're going from G Vegas to. It's kind of the secret tip. Don't tell too many people because we don't need game traffic on the way back. I had a blast, Joey. What surprised me most about this game and when we went there was how many dang Lions fans there were.
Right.
They travel.
Right.
Was I the only one that's shocked about that?
No, it was really surprising.
Are they like an original football team or something?
I don't think so. I don't think they're one of the original ones. I don't think. They're not one of the original eight, I don't think. But I was surprised at how many. They were everywhere. They really were.
Every single person in Michigan is a Detroit Lions fan, or they're just that excited to get out of Detroit. I mean, it was crazy. I mean, all very nice people, too. Like a fan base. I mean, how can the Detroit Lions fan base be mean? You know, seriously.
Right.
It's not like they can talk a bunch of trash.
Right. They haven't had that successful of a franchise.
So, did you see the video I put out today, Joey?
Outstanding. It was very good. I'm so glad you did.
Everybody,
exactly what we needed.
If you're watching the show right now, click the button down at the bottom that says "Get involved in the conversation." Got some articles I'm featuring up there, and hopefully check out our YouTube page and look for this video. I called it. I don't even know what I called it. Name it. Oh, Panthers, Carolina Panthers, boss.
Yeah.
It took me a little while to make it.
I bet.
I hope you appreciated how I clipped that conversation together.
Yes, I did.
So, I'm hoping, Greg Barber, he said, yeah, I deserve that. It was in good fun. I hope that everybody understands that I was just having fun and enjoying it. But I was very pleased with it and getting to talk a little trash back to the people that said we were going to get blown out. What surprised you most about that Detroit game, Joe?
What surprised me most? How we were able to hold them to 7 points, because, I mean, they're talented at the skill positions, you know, and we managed to hold them to 7 points. I thought that was rather impressive. You know, I was almost, if we'd have held them to 17, I would have been impressed, but to hold them to 7, that really speaks volumes about our defense.
Yeah, I agree. Is that, who would have thought that we would have put up such a good showing, you know what I'm saying, like defensively. Look, I know that we were going to do pretty well, right, defensively.
Sure.
But, man, like case closed, case on closed, is that our defense is just straight boss. And I think we really solidified, Joey, that we could very well already be better than last year on defense.
I think so. I really do believe so. I think I was looking at some of the power rankings today, and I believe it was the NFL.com power rankings, where the person who had put it together said Carolina Panthers defense is championship caliber. And I was like, man, he nailed it. That is a championship caliber defense.
Do you think, Joey, that we might be getting too quick to make those types of claims, though? I've been a little worried about this, and I'm going to tell you why, but I'd like to get your response.
No, I don't think so. I think the proof is in the pudding. You know what I'm saying? And honestly, you know, if we were to play the Lions 10 times, I know we wouldn't hold them to 7 every time. And there were a few drop passes. There were,
well, like one in the end zone.
Yeah.
Like one. I think I saw. You know, I've heard that Calvin Johnson drops more passes than people really get on him about. And I don't know if that's. I've just heard that in passing. But I heard he had more drops last. You know, like while he gets so many catches, sometimes it overshadows. Maybe, I don't know, when you throw the ball to him 800 times a game.
He's going to drop one or two.
Yeah. I was stunned a little bit that we were able to hold him as well as we did. But did you notice he was open every play, felt like? I mean, not open, like he wasn't wide open, but even when he's well defended, he's kind of open.
Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, we're saying he had a bad game and he still caught 83 yards worth of passes.
And dropped a touchdown pass.
Right. So, I mean, we talked about it. You know, you're not going to shut him down. You just want to contain him. We talked about that in the show last Wednesday on the premiere of our new Wednesday show, the premier NFC South show. Southbound and down. We talked about that.
Went great, by the way.
Yeah, I think it was fantastic. I think we have a good crew. We're still looking for that Bucks writer. I've been tweeting a ton.
They're still looking for fans, so it's okay. We can handle it for right now. But yeah, we are looking for a Bucks representative. I'm real happy with that, with the way that project is coming out. I think that's going to be very successful. So everybody, Wednesday nights, 10 o'clock. Check us out. You can get it on CarolinaCatChronicles.com and Southbound and Down NFC South podcast. Joey, I want to say this, is we held them to 70 yards rushing, 291 yards in the air. They had a total of 323 yards. They had a little bit more offense than us on the yardage-wise. But I felt like a lot of that at the end came at the end with Joke Bell.
And I think they held the ball longer. So
really?
Yeah, I think they beat us in time of possession. And when you have the ball longer, you're going to be able to put up more yards.
Right.
So that's to be expected. But yeah, they didn't have a bad showing as far as statistics go. They just didn't ever put any points up. You know, it's like that whole thing from last year. We'll let you travel 20-yard line to 20-yard line. We'll let you get all that in there. But when you get down to the 20 and in, you're not going to get anything on us. The field is short. We got that out of bounds acting as a 12th defender. And, you know, we're great against the run, so your only option is to pass. And when you go to pass, you're in danger of getting sacked. Mario Addison backing up the Kraken, or I should say playing in place of the Kraken with 2.5 sacks. You know what I mean? That's great. That's fantastic.
Joey, how were we able to be so effective? And the one thing, I want to give you a stat here that I think stands out a lot, and the reason they weren't able to get points out of this is I think they missed a field goal. I can't remember. It was real early. But here, we had Antoine Kaysen had 2 forced fumbles and a fumble recovery. Graham Gano had a fumble recovery. And also, we had an interception from Melvin White. Right?
Right, off of a collected pass, yep.
We are and that was off of, who made that deflection? Do you remember, was it... I think it was Kaysen.
It was Kaysen or Deku. I can't remember.
Right. It might have been Deku, actually. Obviously, this turnover the turnover differential is really what told the story when it comes to the points and us keeping out of the end zone, drop passing the end zone. But really, what was it that we were able to do so well that put us in those positions, Joey, to force turnovers? The pass rush was tough, but it wasn't dominant like we saw last year, I didn't feel like.
No, I think it was a cumulative type thing, where we got to him enough times to where he was thinking about it. You know,
yeah, he was you turned to me and said he is nervous.
Yeah, he was very uncomfortable back there. He had happy feet, you know what I mean? He was like, I gotta get rid of the ball, gotta get rid of the ball, gotta get rid of the ball. And that was from the early pressures. As the game progressed, he wasn't getting the pressure because he was getting the ball out faster. And when you do that, your margin of error increases. And that's when you're going to get those turnovers. Or incompletions, you know, 3-and-outs, that sort of stuff.
What surprised you on the defensive side of the ball? so much. I mean, obviously holding to seven.
Yeah, I mean,
I would say I didn't see that coming. I thought we were going to give up 17. That's what I called.
Right. And I called 20. I said the score would be 24-20 Panthers. And I got the 24 right, but I didn't get the 20.
Right.
But no, I think the biggest surprise for me was the play of the non-starters on the defensive line, particularly Mario Addison. He had a very good game, 2.5 sacks, you know, plus I don't know how many pressures, but that
I feel like it came a lot towards the end, though. Am I wrong on that? Weren't a lot? I mean, or I feel like maybe the last sack was just at the end.
I know it was. He did have a late sack, yes.
But I guess that's when you got, you know, I mean, shouldn't discount that, right?
Right. That was it for me. Plus, I mean, let's be honest, man. You know, our secondary is playing better than expected. That may be as a direct result of the pressure we're getting on the quarterbacks, but nevertheless.
Joey, we haven't had like 6 sacks a game, though.
You're right.
You know? I mean, really, the pass rush has been there. It's been strong. It's been consistent. But it wasn't like that Atlanta game last year where we just rolled over them every time. You know, and maybe it was a little bit in the Tampa game in the second quarter and the third quarter, but it wasn't towards the end. We were gassed. So to me, this is telling me that this secondary, while they might be benefiting some from the linebacker play and from the front four rush, they are certainly playing far better than anybody saw it coming.
Yeah. I think so. I think they're playing way better than anybody could have thought or hoped, for that matter. And we shouldn't be terribly surprised. And the reason I say that is, you know, those guys are veterans back there. You know, it's not like they're rookies just coming in and blowing people's socks off. Kaysom was a first-round pick. Day 2 was an all-pro. You know, Scott says he was an alternate or whatever, but whatever, he was an all-pro.
Right.
So these guys have skill and talent, you know, so we shouldn't be surprised, but we are because people were underestimating them or considering them washed up.
Similar to the storyline of last year a little bit. I think it's better. I don't know if you noticed, and we'll get to talk with Patrick with this in the second segment. But Mike Mitchell had 2 personal foul calls, and they haven't been able to stop anything in Pittsburgh. So while I think we did make Mike Mitchell look a lot, not better than he was, but he really thrives in our system. So I'm not trying to throw him under the bus. You know, if I could give you one surprising thing, Joey, that stood out to me in this game was our ability to really eliminate anybody but Calvin Johnson and Bell. Bell at the end. You know what I mean? Bell didn't have a good game early. He did have some big run, like screen passes and some stuff in the last second. You know, kind of when it was over.
Right.
And there was really no hope. And they were just making sure he didn't get behind him and some things like that. I thought this, and I want to pull up his individual stats real quick, and that is I wouldn't even have known that Reggie Bush was on the field. Actually, here, this tells you. He had 6 rushes for 26 yards and 2 receptions for 6 yards. That was his game.
So he was in for 8 plays.
Yes.
He got 8 touches at least.
Yeah, he got 8 targets and touches. He got the ball 8 times. I thought this was the guy that we were going to have a lot of trouble with. Golden Tate, 5 catches for 57 yards. Their leading receiver was their running back at 6 catches for 61 yards. Joke security guard Bill. And that dude is big. I mean, I mean, obviously he's pretty good.
Right.
I mean, I'm not trying. I mean, his name is Jokey. I mean, but how can we not make fun of a guy named, I mean, it's call him Joke. You know, I mean, I'm just saying his name. But the only thing that was a joke, really, was this supposed high-power offense that we just made look. I'm wondering this. Were they just overrated, Joey, or did we make them look mediocre?
I don't think they were overrated. I mean, maybe
they have the weapon.
Yeah, I mean, there's no denying that. I just think
their offensive line is shambles.
Yeah, their offensive line is weak, and then you know that plays to our strength. Really, a weak offensive line is the worst possible area you could be weak at when you play us.
Yeah, I agree. All right, let's move to the offensive side of the ball before we go to the second segment and we bring in Patrick, the Steelers rep from DraftTech.com. Patrick Mayfield will be joining us in just a second on the C3 podcast. Joey, I guess when it comes to the offense, there's two things that I think that kind of, I won't say stood out to me. Three things, actually. Number one, our offense moves the ball far better than anybody could give us credit for.
Right.
Number two, our run game and offensive line was not as productive as it was in week one. And number three, probably the big story to me, was just how effective Cam Newton looked and how good he was out there as a quarterback and as a passer.
Right. He looked very comfortable. Very comfortable back there. Going through his progressions, didn't rush. I think he looked great.
I mean, he made a couple of typical Cam Newton things early on where he, you know, I feel like Cam Newton sometimes plays like I play Madden.
Right.
And what I mean is that I it's so much information to take in, like watching all the routes develop, seeing what the coverage is and all of this. I really pick my play and kind of know who I want to go to. And I'm kind of throwing it to that guy no matter what. You know, is that like, I like that play. I wanted to run the post. So that's what we're throwing. And unless it takes a long time to develop. And I feel like that's, you know, Cam, if that's his problem, is that he knows where he wants to go a little bit too much at times when he's in a pin. If it's third and long, he's like, I'm just going to go to Benjamin. What do you think was up with Benjamin?
I think I was on Twitter earlier and I saw, I believe it was Colin Hoggard. Is that his name from WFNZ?
Yeah. That's Colin. That's the one that does the Charlotte the call up show with Nate Conley now from 10 to 12.
Okay, well he was putting up some stuff. I guess he has the all 22. Package from the NFL where you can, you know, break down film real well. And he showed me, or he put up, posted on Twitter a one play that Kelvin Benjamin caught, where he caught a pass, and he showed the entire route that everybody ran, and it was freaking awesome. The combination of route was spectacular, and what it did was it pushed all the defenders back and allowed Kelvin Benjamin to come behind the linebackers but in front of the safeties. And that shows me the development of our passing game, the development of Cam, the abilities that Kelvin Benjamin brings to the team, how he can catch the ball in any situation. You know, he's not just a one-dimensional receiver. He can come inside, he can go outside, he can go deep, he could catch it short.
He had three drops, though, Jeff.
He did. He did.
I don't really have a problem with it.
No, me neither. You know, it's going
to
happen.
I think that we need to say something about it, though, because all he's gotten is just praise. You know, he dropped some big passes that could have been helpful. Cam kept going back to him. Thought that was good.
And he knows that. He knows that he dropped the ball that maybe would have kept the drive alive, could have led to more points. He knows that. So it's going to be something he works on. And let's remember, he is only a rookie. He's going to have lapses in concentration and his focus. And you know, he's got Ricky Proles, so that stuff will get better.
Yeah, I think so, is that you've got to only be, I mean, obviously we're more than pleased with how good he's playing. I think one of the things is that he's got that swag to him where he's able to shrug it off, where those drops, while they might be, they sucked. I mean, overall, they were kind of some easy passes that he dropped. Mm-hmm. But then he goes and makes this spectacular catch. Now, this is some of the criticism that he got coming into the league a little bit, lack of focus, some things. But I think we're so hypercritical of draft picks and every catch that, like, sometimes it can negate what actually, like you're saying, they do well. Route running, the way they can be dynamic. I was worried about the guy's downfield speed a little bit. I mean, he's such a big dude. He looks like a damn linebacker.
Right.
Playing receiver. And he has that deceptive speed. You know, is that he might not clock well, like on the dang measurables, but he's pretty damn fast for his size. Or he's able to figure out ways to maximize that speed. And just to, I guess, point out to everybody, those people that run the 4.3s, they don't run that every 40 yards.
Yeah, and they don't run that in full football pads. They'll run a 4.3 almost naked. But when you throw on equipment, they're going to run a 4.3. And somebody like Benjamin, you know, he might only clock at a 4.6, but you put the pads on him, and he's still going to run that 4.6 because he's so big and strong, and his length makes him, him being able to reach out or reach up and grab the ball is a factor as well. That helps him to create separation.
Right. I agree. And so I think that this is that we just have to conclude right away that that game right there was, we said going into it, Joey, was a statement game. So
yes.
We made a statement in the NFC South. We had some good things shaken out. We're going to talk about that a little bit right now. But before we get into all that in the matchup this week, I'd like to welcome our guest for tonight, Draft Tech analyst Patrick Mayfield. Did I get that right, Patrick?
Yes, you did.
All right, Draft Tech analyst for the Pittsburgh Steelers. And thanks for coming on the show tonight, Patrick.
Yeah, very pleased to be here.
So just tell us a little bit about yourself. You know, obviously Steelers fan and analyst. How long have you been writing with Draft Tech?
I've been with Draft Tech for, I think, about 5 years now.
Okay.
And just kind of got into the draft, and I'm originally from the Pittsburgh area, and like many Pittsburghers, the economy in Pittsburgh being what it is, I'm an expat, so I live in the Boston area, actually, and just follow the team really closely, kind of continue my identity as a Pittsburgher, and, you know, really into the, you know, knowing the roster and, you know, having the, doing draft analysis is another outlet for that, and pleased to be a part of this.
Are there a lot of Steeler fans in the Boston area?
Oh, sure. There are two or three Steeler bars. On a good game out of market, you could have at least 100 fans at each.
Wow.
Nice.
They are
nice.
Everywhere. I live in Charleston, South Carolina, and I swear there are more Steeler fans here than I know what to do with.
Yep.
They're everywhere.
It's the diaspora.
That's right. On the TV, they'll tell you that we travel well, but we're just already there.
Exactly.
Yeah,
that's the truth.
I agree. That's bar here. There's a bar where I live at, and I live in a small, like a relatively small town comparative to any of the towns that football teams play in. And there's a Steelers bar here, but there's not even a damn Panthers bar. So, I mean, they got a whole damn like banquet room reserved for them guys. But let's go ahead and jump into the show and talk about some football. Patrick, we brought you on because tonight, because Sunday, it's Sunday night game, primetime matchup, 1 of 3 for the Carolina Panthers. And I believe it is a home game, right, Joe?
That's right.
Okay, so the Steelers are coming to town. what's right now? Tell us a little bit about the current situation with Pittsburgh. You lost on Monday Night Football to the Baltimore Ravens and squeaked out a victory, right, in week one against the Cleveland Browns. How are you guys looking coming into Charlotte?
Schizophrenic maybe would be a good word for it. On week one in Cleveland, there was kind of a tale of two halves. The first half of the game, the Steelers couldn't do anything wrong. In the second half, they couldn't do anything right, except for the last 5 minutes where they managed to get a field goal to win that game. A lot of mistackling, a lot of yards after the catch given up to the Browns receivers. And last week was actually the Thursday night game, and it pretty much got handled by Baltimore. Baltimore came to play, and the Steelers, again, missing tackles, and offense wasn't really clicking. Big Ben took a huge hit from Courtney Upshaw pretty early in the game and just didn't quite see himself after that.
So is he the same?
They're a team in transition right now.
So I agree. The defense is not, and I'm just going to get the national media coverage when it comes to Pittsburgh and North Carolina. You know, the Dick LeBeau defense is not what it used to be, that the guys are getting old, they're putting new parts in. But for me, when I look at that, is Roethlisberger, can he still be the guy? Or is it just me? Am I being hard on him? I mean, like you said, after that hit, he didn't look right. But I don't even know how old he is now, but is he still capable of being that top, that quarterback that, you know, made you guys so successful for so long?
I think he certainly is. The difference this year is that, you know, he is a veteran. I think maybe he's in his 10th or 11th year, and he has to carry the team from a leadership standpoint, where in the past he's had, you know, the Jerome Bettises or the Hines Wards to carry that aspect of the game. So, and he's had a lot of mentors in the backup quarterback ranks. He's had Charlie Batch and Byron Leftwich there carrying the clipboard and watching film with him. And now he's the man. He has to kind of take that on himself. And, you know, demand of the receivers, you know, in the way that a great quarterback would. And I'm not sure that he's up to that part of the game. But physically, he's certainly fine. And particularly in week one in Cleveland, he looked, you know, vintage Roethlisberger, elusive, and, you know, hitting, you know, pinpoint passes on the run. So physically it's there. But from a leadership standpoint, something's definitely been lost.
I won't say he had a questionable personality, but I can see what you're saying is that was he ever meant for that role, or, you know, ready to assume that mantle? And that's one thing that I guess we see this maybe with Eli Manning a little bit, and in with the Giants, is that in the years that they were most successful, they really didn't have to take on that responsibility as much. There were other guys that could be those personalities in the locker room, so they could just go out and play quarterback a little bit more. And one of the things is that we've been watching, or we've been interested, what do you think about Mike Mitchell? Have you been pleased with his performance? He kind of was a guy that was able to rejuvenate his career for a year in Carolina last year. Tell us what you've seen out of Mike Mitchell.
He really hasn't looked good. To start with, he was injured for a good bit of training camp, so he hasn't exactly had a lot of time to settle with the team. And the Baltimore game was particularly poor for him. Where he took a couple bad angles, and I believe he had two unsportsmanlike conduct penalties.
Yeah, he had two personal fouls.
Yeah, he seemed like he was pretty heated up, and, you know, had to be pulled away from engaging with the other team after the whistle.
Right. He actually got taken to the sideline, and it looked like got into it, not heatedly, but mildly with Tomlin, is what it looked like. I was a huge Mike Mitchell fan when he was here at Carolina. I loved his style of play. I liked his story, having come from Oakland and sort of been a disappointment there, but he has all these tremendous physical abilities, comes to Carolina, fits into our system perfectly and plays well. He wasn't all-star caliber, but he played very well. And I knew there was no doubt in my mind that when he left, he was not going to be as effective wherever he went as he was here in Charlotte, just because of the people who he had in front of him. And I'm not disparaging the Steelers' defense in any way, but they're not to the same level as the front seven of the Panthers. So I think that allows Mike Mitchell to be exploited a bit more.
I can agree with that. I mean, we all know the secondary depends on the pass rush, so that's something that's been a little bit lacking, and I think you guys have had a fair bit of success there.
He's a big hitter. You know, he is. He's kind of a guy that he reminds me a little bit of the Rodney Harrison. Isn't that his name that used to play for the Patriots?
Yeah.
The dude that said that that Carolina should bench Cam Newton.
Yeah.
that guy. Is that he was known for being a kind of a person, like a onerous personality a little bit, or, hard hitting on the field. Mike Mitchell is an emotions guy. So he plays and he feeds off of that, and sometimes that can be an enemy of his. And at times you'll find him getting so worked up that it affects his game in a negative way. While a lot of times he's able to capitalize on that. So we're interested to see how he performs. We're kind of rooting and cheering for him because, like Joey said, he's a good storyline for us as an organization. How about this? Tell us about the chatter for the Carolina Panthers. What are you guys talking about this week when it comes among the Steelers community? Are you guys talking about the Panthers? Are you talking more about your own team? And just one side note before we get in that, I would never get in Mike Tomlin's face, yo. I don't care if I was a football player. So Mike Mitchell, warning, don't do that mess. But what's going on in the Steelers community right now? What's the focus? What's the chatter? Where's it coming from?
Yeah, it's very much inwardly focused, and the kind of synopsis is that we've beaten ourselves, and the tackling isn't there, and as I mentioned earlier, that the defense is very much in transition. We have some new faces that are drafted for the defensive line. We have Mike Mitchell to integrate. We have a new linebacker on the inside, and so we're kind of at the point where those guys are trying to take on their role. And at that same time, the veterans that know their role have to just do their job and not try to cover for other people because, the defense works when everyone, fills their gap, so to speak. And so, the talk right now is basically trying to figure out, how to get the defense to execute better.
I want to ask about a couple of players. First, I believe you were just sort of mentioning him, Shazier, I believe. I want to ask about him. And I want to ask about your running backs. I have seen often, he used to be in Tampa, so we got to see a good bit of LeGarrette Blount. And he's a hard runner. He's a big guy with some good speed. So I wanted to ask you what your thoughts were on him and the second-year player that you have in the backfield going with him.
Yeah, Le'Veon Bell.
Yeah, Bell. I wanted to ask about him. If you could give me maybe some of your thoughts on those three players, I'd be interested in hearing what you have to say about them.
Sure. So Le'Veon Bell is definitely the bell cow, so to speak, of the offense. He's going to get 80% of the carries at least. They put Blount in basically to spell him, and in some cases where he may be a short yardage situation. But Blount really hasn't been that successful, which is probably more of a function of the O-line not being that successful at running our scheme there yet. But Le'Veon Bell has been extremely explosive. They've been getting him the ball a number of ways. He can catch the ball very well as a receiver. He's very elusive, picking his way, picking his blocks through the linebacking core. I think that could be one of the highlights of this game is kind of watching him versus Kuechly to see how that matchup plays out. He's a very dynamic player, and honestly, he's maybe 60% of the offense from this season.
Wow. And Shazier?
Shazier has been good. He has a lot to learn still, but he's very fast and he's flashed that. Unfortunately, he's another guy that missed a fair bit of training camp. So we don't quite know what we have there, but he's an extremely high character guy and the physicals are off the charts. He hasn't really splashed in the regular season. The first preseason game he played in, he looked really good, you know, making some very athletic interceptions and, you know, running the ball, you know, very impressively. But I think he will be good, but right now he's going to look like a rookie a little bit.
What, with that defense, tell us a little bit about your pass rush, because what we're going to be looking at a lot, or what I think this game and any game hinges on, and I know this is just flogging the horse and the cliche type stuff, but it's one in the trenches. It's, you know, the real story of a football game is told on who wins at the line. And like you said, the secondary, a secondary can be awesome if you got a great front four. It can be terrible if you don't. With the Carolina Panthers right now, me and Joey were at the Detroit Lions game, the Panthers-Detroit Lions game, and we had a lot of trouble on the offensive line. I would say a reasonable amount of trouble. Not that I would say overall we played pretty well for what the guys that we got, but we are playing with rookies. We're playing with undrafted free agents. The kind of guys that we're asking to do these things, play left tackle, play right. Our right guard, our left tackle is an undrafted free agent. Our right guard is a rookie, and our right tackle used to be a defensive tackle 2 years ago. So it's like this bizarre mismatch of individuals, and the only person that is kind of like that would probably start on other teams in some cases on good lines would be Ryan Khalil. So, you know, are you guys going to be able to capitalize on that, or have you had trouble getting after the quarterback to this point in the season?
It's definitely been a troublesome spot. I think probably the total on sacks is it's either 3 or 4, but nothing particularly impressive has been shown. We have Jarvis Jones, you know, is still kind of a work in progress. He's coming back for his second year here, and he's shown a kind of a reluctance to take on the blocks and, you know, make an inside move, and you see him get run around the arc a lot.
Didn't he play at Georgia?
On the other side, we have... Sorry?
Didn't he play at Georgia?
Jarvis
yes, Jones? Yep. He did? Okay, I know who you're talking about now.
Yeah, he was very productive at Georgia. Where they kind of featured him as, like, they funneled the stuff, you know, the play to him, and he's a very instinctive player, but, playing in a 3-4 as an outside backer, he has to take on tackles, he has to, you know, take on double blocks, he has to have run responsibility. There's a lot more going on than he was kind of brought up with at Georgia.
Than just making tackles. Yeah.
And on the other side, we have Jason Worlds, who is a former second-round draft pick, and he's tagged right now, so I guess he's on his fifth year. And the light seemed to come on late last season, but, it's, you know, he hasn't been overly impressive, so it's... He has the potential problem is that the defensive ends are a little bit in flux, and so we brought back Brett Kiesel again, and he's, I think, the fourth oldest player in the league at end. So you have him on one side and Cam Hayward on the other. I think Hayward's the budding star, but, you know, we're kind of trying to rotate in some other players, so you might see the guy's name. We picked up a defensive tackle from San Diego, Cam Thomas, and he's a liability. So whenever you see him in there, whoever is playing next to him is probably not going to do well, and you might run straight over him.
All right. Well, we could use that. Hopefully they'll put Trey Turner on him to get his confidence back up because he just got mauled by Nick Fairley last week. I mean, we had to play it was up the gut that we had a lot of problems last weekend, and that generally probably isn't where we're the weakest. So with that, our offense seemed to move the ball a lot better than we expected with Cam Newton's first appearance back. So we're expecting us to be working some of the kinks out. So I think you'll see an offense that isn't necessarily stuck in the mud on Sunday night. I think you'll see an offense that has some ability, and we'll just see how that offensive line can handle if they can make some adjustments. On the other side of the ball, the offense for the Steelers, you guys have been, it seems like, well, the Monday night game with Baltimore, I don't know. I didn't watch it as closely as I probably should have, but yeah, it was a Monday night game, right?
Thursday.
Or no, it was Thursday night.
Yeah.
Thursday night. y'all looked, I mean, I'm not trying to be rude, but y'all looked atrocious. And I don't really think that Baltimore is as good as they looked on Thursday. So it seemed like you had a lot of problems on defense, but that offense just could not get it together. Why is that? Because there seems to be some real, I mean, we got Roethlisberger. I know you said he took a big hit, and that kind of altered, you know, like where he was at mentally. Maybe even it was a little injury nicked up. Who knows? But, I mean, that Antonio Brown kid, I feel, Antonio Brown?
Yeah.
That guy is a monster and awesome. But poor him. Man, Ben Roethlisberger just left him out to dry. Like, three or four times I saw him going up in the air to get passes and just getting murdered in the middle. What's going on offense? Why is it that you guys, because you guys put up a ton of points against the Browns in week one. What was the problem against the Ravens?
It's really kind of hard to say. The team really just seemed flat. It seemed like, so we have the number two receiver is Marcus Wheaton, who's a second-year player out of Oregon.
Right.
And he's not quite on the same page as Ben. He had some injuries last year, so he doesn't have a whole lot of experience. And so a lot of the disconnects week two were, you know, passes where, you know, Wheaton was taking one read and Ben's taking another and the ball, you know, wasn't in the right place. So I don't know if that you could pin that on Ben or maybe it's Wheaton, but they seem like they're correctable mistakes, but there's a lot of cases where, you know, guys aren't on the same page as far as the reads on the field. And, you know, the offensive line was allowing a fair bit of pressure against Ben, and you know, he kind of likes to hold on to the ball and be elusive, but you know, he takes sacks with that at the same time. And
he got racked up. He got racked up a couple of times. What about the kid, Joe? Who was that kid that came from Clemson? Martavius Bryant.
Yeah.
Didn't he go to the Steelers?
He did. He actually isn't game day active yet.
No,
he's kind of looked like a raw prospect that needs kind of a. He's on a scholarship this year, so to speak.
Is he on the practice squad?
No, he's on the roster, but he hasn't gotten the hat of the game day.
Yeah.
Wow, because he's super fast and tall, but you know, there's a lot of question marks surrounding him. I think that you know, the draft, and since you follow the draft so closely, we just are so hypercritical and trying to forecast so many things in the draft that a guy like that who is going to take time to develop can be like such a, I mean, I won't say a high prospect, but everybody, you know, it's just a hot name and people wanted to jump on that board, on that bandwagon so quick because he's so fast and so tall. Joe, ask Patrick, what's on your mind about the Steelers going this week for us?
Really, Patrick, I want to know how you think how the Steelers' offensive line, what they'll do to try to impede the Panthers' pass rush. Will they use backs? Will they keep the tight end in? And I know he's a favorite target of Roethlisberger. So I'm interested to see what your thoughts are and what they'll do to help slow down that Panthers' pass rush.
Yeah, in the past when they've had trouble with the pass rush, they've kept Heath Miller in more to block. And, you know, when he's an older player now as well. And when he was younger, he was a very good blocker. But we have had a lot of problems on right tackle with Marcus Gilbert, the tackle over there. I mean, they're going to have to – I think the Todd Haley philosophy to deal with that is to try to dink and dunk and to get the ball to backs, you know, swung out in the flat and so forth to try to make the defense be accountable for the whole field instead of being able to pin their ears back and come after them. I expect them to try to do that.
So the flat routes, they'll go a lot to the flats and swing passes.
Sure.
Okay. I think that's a good strategy. I mean, if you can't stop them physically, you know, spread them out instead of letting them come straight upfield. I think that's a pretty good strategy, actually. I'd be interested to see how that works.
What do you think What do you think the state is? And Joe, I'm going to let you ask that question. I'm sorry for interrupting.
No, that's fine. I was just going to ask, do you see them trying to run the ball more than...
Oh, positively.
Do you see them putting an emphasis on the run? Okay.
Yeah, they always want to try to establish the run if they can. I mean, that's kind of the... If you can do that, you can generally win the game if you can run consistently. So they will definitely try to do that. It hasn't been something they've been terrifically successful with. They kind of have some odd looks where they're doing kind of delayed handoffs and so forth, which, you know, when they work, you know, and Le'Veon Bell's able to pick his way through traffic, they look fantastic. But, you know, sometimes you hand the ball there to the guy and the defensive tackle are already grabbing him as you hand him the ball.
Yeah.
So it's the run game has not been potent, but... they will definitely stick with it.
Joe, I just noticed this because I'm a crappy host and producer of this show, is that we had a couple of comments a while back by some people on a feature I didn't notice, that I didn't even know that I had activated. So Mike Todd from YouTube, he's on YouTube following us, he mentioned when we were talking about Kelvin Benjamin's speed, is that speed doesn't make the receiver, and he pointed out that Jerry Rice ran a 4.471. If Jerry ran that slow, good Lord, everybody in the NFL must have been slower then. And Justin Merkwa is happy that we are 2-0. So I just want to mention that, even though it was like 30 minutes ago. what I want to ask, and before we just kind of start getting towards the end of the show and issue our ice up picks and talk about just some plugs and give everybody the opportunity to promote themselves, Patrick, what are your are you downtrodden now coming into Carolina on Thursday? You guys got two back-to-back primetime games. You've had a little extra time since you had a Thursday and you go all the way to Sunday. Is this like a story of, and I don't know what the Steelers culture is like among the fans, such a successful organization for so long or so much success. Last year you started out, I think, like 0-5 or 0-6. It was like a terrible start. I don't know what it was, but it was bad. And then somehow you pieced together a decent season towards the end. Is this one of those things? Is this a story of optimism that you guys can correct this and get better? Or are you guys coming into what we call Bank of America, the vault, with this is going to be a long season?
Yeah, it's kind of an issue where we don't know what kind of team we have. I mean, the fans kind of know that they're a team in transition, and to that extent, you kind of expect it to be harder in the beginning of the season. And, you know, this is going to be a hard game, you know, against a good team. But, you know, there's a lot of people that, you know, you would like to call for Todd Haley's head or, you know, try to make a more drastic change and, that, you know, questioning whether or not Dick LeBeau has been passed by with, you know, by the game. But, I mean, the Steelers have, you know, if we make a comparison, if Carolina, you know, plus minus takeaways is plus 6, Pittsburgh's minus 4. So that kind of tells you a lot about how, you know, the teams are actually playing football at what level, right? So Carolina's, you know, maybe not, you know, filling up the top 10 plays on SportsCenter, but they're playing good football and they're winning games by that merit. And the Steelers are, you know, sometimes doing the complete opposite. So it's a fixable solution if they can tackle better and, you know, work on some fundamentals. As strange as that sounds as a professional team, that's really what they need to do to pin stuff down, because the defense is predicated on stopping the run and then, you know, limiting big plays in the secondary, and they've not been able to do the first part, which kind of limits their ability to go into nickel and really control the secondary.
Well, I can tell you one thing is you won't see Carolina Panthers on the top 10 on SportsCenter, even if they were making great plays. The only way we're going to be on the top 10 on SportsCenter is if Greg Hardy marches out in the field and punches some chick in the face, and then they spend 3 weeks on all only that, and that being the storyline of this team. We don't get any love. We are a little jaded as fans because of that, because – when we're good, people don't give any credit to it. And when we're bad, people just, well, were just dismissed entirely, which is okay in that part. But so we got a tough run in a small market. There's, you know, a young team. So don't – you're right, is that we are playing good football. It's still early. I like to hear that those things can be corrected. What are you thinking? Why don't you just give us a pick for the game? Is who's going to win? What's the score going to be? Or do you want me to go to Joe with that and give you a moment to think about it?
No, I can't pick against the Steelers. I'm going to say 27-24 Steelers win.
Wow.
I like that. That's a lot of points. That's a lot of points, man.
I know. I like how he comes on our show and then picks his team to win. That's what I would do.
I would expect nothing less. Yes. Yeah.
I agree. Right.
A lot of points.
If they put up 27 points.
Do you guys see this as a trap game at all?
What's that?
Do you guys see this as a potential trap game at all, you know, having to come out to a, you know, pretty good start there?
I don't know. I don't think so, just because Ron Rivera is such an even keel kind of guy. He won't let the guys get too high. And he won't let them get too low. He tries to keep them on a very even keel. And we are a young team, but we do have a good mix of veterans in there with Thomas Davis, Charles Johnson. We've got some veteran players in there that I think help keep Ryan Khalil, keep the guys focused. I really think so. For the Steelers, this game is much more important than for the Panthers, and that doesn't sound quite as the way I'm trying to say it. The game, I think, is more important to Pittsburgh than to Carolina. Yes, Carolina wants to win, but I think Pittsburgh needs this win. Going 0-3 after, like Tony said, the rough start they had last year, I think they really need this win to kind of give them a little confidence. Show that they, you know, like you said, get those fundamentals squared away so that they can tackle. You know, give them a little faith in themselves. I believe Carolina wins the game. I believe Carolina wins the game going away. I'm going to say 24-10. Two touchdowns.
Yeah, I'm glad you asked this question, Patrick, because I was thinking about this just today in that – you know, Carolina Panthers are riding high to a certain degree. The fan base is a little bit. We have not won our opening game in a season since 2008. We did that. We haven't started 2-0 since 2008. It's been a long road for the Panther fans. I think that what prevents this from being a trap game is this might be the one time the small market and the Greg Hardy mess overshadowing our strong start. That really, right now, when you look at the national media, nobody wants to admit that we're any good. They want to say that it's early, that this offense, you know, there's new receivers. I mean, and I just think this is our defense every week in and week out, gives us the opportunity to win every ball game we're in. So I think that hopefully we do, in your, maybe towards your kind of suggestion, we are kind of like crappy in primetime games. Mm-hmm. We won one last year against New England on Monday Night Football, which was huge. But traditionally, we kind of – Thursday night games were terrible. You know, I mean, I don't know. So I don't think we lose this game either. I didn't see enough from the Steelers to suggest – hopefully you're right that they can correct some things, or hopefully you're wrong, actually. I'm thinking – I hate to say 24 because Joey said that, and that's what we scored last week, but I say 24-13 Panthers to start 3-0. So that's what I got for that. Last part of the show, 1 second, because we're over 2 minutes, and we'll just go ahead and get this out of the way. We are bringing back an important feature from last year, the Ice Up Picks of the Week, Joe. I brought it out of the vault. Let me see if I even got the graphic. Booyah. There's the old Steve Smith ice up graphic for you right there. This is where we get to tell Patrick, and I know you probably haven't seen this aspect of the show before. This is where we get to tell, and you can see this is one of the first graphics I ever made. That Photoshop is horrible. This is where we tell somebody in the national football world, fan, analyst, team, player, it could even be off topic, if for all I care, where we tell them to toughen up, to get their act together, to ice up, son. So this is my, I'm going to start it off, Joey, because I'm fired up this week. I am mad. I'm mad as you were last week against JC Del Torre, and I'm surprised I've suppressed this rage over the last day. This guy by the name of Michael Roch, at Who's the Boff? Who's the Bust, in my opinion? He's on Twitter. He's a Tampa Bay Buccaneers analyst for some. You know what? I'm not going to call him an analyst. This dude is a joke. And all he did was talk trash to us for 2 days straight about how their team has more talent than ours. That their team, at one point he said this. He said, I don't want to talk to y'all because you're not true fans unless you got a Kevin Green jersey. Kevin Green played football when I was like 9. And on top of that, he then accused us of living in double wides. It was such a jerk. So Michael Roch, at Who's the Boff, this comes from Carolina Cat Chronicles, the voice of Panther Nation, ice up, son.
Very nice.
That's what I got to say.
Very, very nice. I like that. I would have to give my ice up, son, pick of the week to a man who I really did respect and I really did admire at one time, but I can't say that anymore. I still think he does a lot of good work, but when it comes to football, I have a new level of disrespect for him now.
Yeah, I already know who this is.
And it is you, Coach Tony Dungy.
Oh, wow, you surprised me on that.
You're a very good man. You do a lot of good things for the community. But you are a backpedaling son of a gun. You called the Panthers to lose, that your Buccaneers were going to beat them, and the Panthers were slipping. And lo and behold, we came out and waxed the Bucks. And now you are, oh, the Panthers are good. The Panthers are for real.
They're a playoff team.
So all I can say, Coach Dungy, is get it together. If you're going to pick against the Panthers, do it. If you're going to pick for the Panthers, stick with it. But until then, ice up, son.
All right. Well done. I thought you were going to say Stephen A. Smith when you said so disrespectful. All right, Patrick, you're the guest here. Would you like to offer a guest ice up pick of the week?
I would. I'd like to focus inwardly again and focus on Mike Mitchell, who was a little bit of a liability last week. You know, the way the Steelers' defense works is he has to be the cool guy. He has to be the quarterback of the defense. He has to let Troy Polamalu go, you know, be a spider monkey and a Tasmanian devil in the front end. So he has to ice up there, and I've got to hold that playbook in there in the tub with him, watch some video while he's icing up. But Mike Mitchell, please ice up, son.
Very nice.
I know. That's great because my man comes on the Carolina Panthers fan podcast. He picks the Steelers. He then calls out Mike Mitchell, ice up. Patrick, it was great having you on the show, man, and I don't think I could have done a better job if I went on anybody else's fan podcast. Loved it. Thank you for having us, for coming on the show. And why don't you go ahead right before we close out and tell our fans, because we've got some people still watching, hanging in there. Matthew Deering just popped in and said Kelvin Benjamin had 2 top 10 plays of the week in his first week as a player. So, and he didn't even punch a girl in the face.
Nice.
And so that's all good. So tell our fans, Patrick, because this was great having you on, because you know, getting outside the NFC is outside our comfort zone other than the regular typical discussions. So it was nice to have some kind of insider insight. Tell our fans and our just actually Panther fans how they could follow you and maybe follow some of your work.
Well, I'm the Steelers analyst for Draft Tech, and that's pretty much my only activity as an NFL journalist. So, you know, www.drafttech.com is, you know, year-round draft coverage, and, you know, it's analysts that dedicated to every team and a kind of a computer-based model to, you know, predict the draft based on, you know, original research and putting out a quality product.
All right, well, my question is now, before we go off the air, who are you mocking right now to Pittsburgh? First round.
For the first round, it'll probably be the best available cornerback. I can't remember the guy's name right now. I believe he's out of Florida State. Okay. You know, the Steelers have been neglecting cornerback for several years. You know, this past year, we picked a fifth rounder, and, you know, he's on the practice squad now. And if you look back over, like, the last 13 corners they've drafted, you know, only four of them have had careers in the league, and only one of them's on the roster now. So they need to step up and, you know, spend the capital there in the draft early on.
So that fifth round pick was a bad pick.
They get lucky and strike gold, and they want to keep going back and, you know, find some nuggets, you know.
Right.
I agree. I wouldn't mind the Carolina Panthers getting a corner. Actually, you know what? We got to add one more thing to your resume. You are now the official Pittsburgh correspondent for Carolina Cat Chronicles.
Yes, sir.
Add it to the CV. Joey, tell them what you're working at. I know you got a big project you're proud of that's coming on tomorrow.
Yes, tomorrow. This episode number two of the premier NFC South video talk show. It is Southbound and Down. We will have some very harsh words for two members of the panel, Scott Karasik and Greg Barber. I hope you guys are hungry because we will be feeding you much crow.
FailCon. And we even made a tribute video to you just for this very moment. Everybody can check that out on our YouTube channel. It is awesome. I'm very proud of it. So thanks for joining us on the CarolinaCatChronicles.com C3 podcast, where you can find us every Tuesday night at 10 p.m., where we will be talking all things Panthers. And make sure, remember, we're the voice of Panther Nation. What we do is we kind of mix journalism, well, a little bit of journalism, with a lot of fan. So thanks for tuning in. Thanks, Patrick. Thanks, Joe. And we'll see you next Tuesday night.
All right. Thanks a lot, Patrick. Look forward to